You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
All right, so today is a very big day, a really big day, at least for me, I'll put it that way, or for me and Toby. So I'm in a band called Matt and Toby. And it's one of the really three or four things that I do, maybe four or five things I do, that makes up my income and my job and what I do. My whole career at this point is doing a few podcasts and a couple of bands. That's really what I do. And not a single one of those things could really support, help me support my family. My wife does work, by the way. But even to make up my income, none of those things individually do it really at all. But all of them together kind of do, or is working and working better and better all the time. This project, Matt and Toby, is something that we started doing because we had music that didn't really fit on Emery albums, and we wanted to release it and keep working on it and things like that. And we put out an album on Tooth and Nail a few years ago, and it did really well, but we were not disciplined and we were busy and did other things and haven't followed up with it or done that much with it in a few years. So we used to do a bunch of living room shows for Matt and Toby, but at this point, we are out on the road. In fact, today's the first show of our tour with the Classic Crime, and so you can find tour dates there. Come and see us. We're on the road today. So I think we're in Nashville today, and classiccrime.com for that. And so we're doing these shows and this music on tour for the first time, and the reason we're doing that is because we have a new album, and the new album is available for pre-order today. So today is the day, the first day, that anybody gets to hear what we've been working on this new album that is virtually complete. We're still in mixing and changing some arrangements here and there, but we've most of it's mixed and about ready to go to master. So what's interesting about this is we funded the project ourselves. We didn't crowdfund it. We just paid the money, spent the money, and have recorded the project. And today is the day that the pre-order opens up. And so it is a very big deal to me, and I'm asking people to please consider buying this music. So we're going to talk about, Toby's on the show today, and we're going to talk about the album and goof off a little bit, and we're going to premiere a song. So this will be the first time that the world has heard a song. The song's called Pastor Stop By. The album is called I Quit Church, and it's full of songs that Toby and I have done at churches. We've both led worship and done hymns, and some of them are quite beautiful old hymns that we love and have arranged, and we decided to put some of them in a record as well as some original songs. And the Pastor Stop By is one of those original songs, and this is my favorite one from the record, at least at this point. And we're playing some of those songs live on tour. Now, anybody that pre-orders the record can get some of the songs right away. So even I think we're going to give even unmastered, you know, raw versions of these mixes where we're at right now as of today away. Or maybe they're polished, I don't know at this point, but we are going to give you a couple of songs right away to anybody that pre-orders the record at all. You'll get them instantly, and then you will still get the record early before release date. And that is a big deal because the pre-order time is how we make money. Now, we didn't crowdfund or anything. And when release date comes, it'll be out on Spotify. So this is our window to try to sell units of an album, digital, vinyl, those kinds of things. So it's quite important to us. And I won't guilt trip you any more than that. I don't even mean to be guilt tripping you. I'm just trying to explain how it works for me and for us. But I'm very proud of this album. It is really, really something. And you'll make your own determination about that. But if you do like it, I would ask you to consider purchasing the music instead of just streaming it. But please do stream it by all means when it comes out too. No issue there. You do what suits you and I'll do what suits me and we'll all get along just fine. But today's the first day on it. But I'll tell you what, if you use the promo code DOWN, you go to mattandtobyband.com and use the promo code DOWN, D-O-W-N, and you can get 15% off of whatever you get there at the pre-order. So, I mean, a digital album's cheap enough, and now you can get 15% off right away and get two of the tracks way before the release, and we'll still send you the whole release early before it's on Spotify or in stores, which it will be. By all means, if you like buying music in stores, this one will be distributed, and you should be able to find it in a store on the release date, which I don't even know what the release date is as of this moment. And there you go. So I think you'll enjoy this episode. And then I ask, come out and see us on doing these shows. I think they're going to be really good. Now, today's show is brought to you always by Broadcast Supply Worldwide, BSWUSA.com. Get your podcast gear there. Get your microphones. Get your XLR cables. Get your mixers. Get your interfaces. And call them up and ask them, what interface should I use? How should I connect to Skype? They're great people. Good company. It's where I get my stuff, and you should too. 10% off any of the podcast gear you get there if you use my promo code DOWN, D-O-W-N. And additionally, Joey Sturgis Tones, awesome, awesome company, makes audio software and plugins that are, I mean, as low as $39 for some very specific plugins that you will find useful, as I do. And that's joeysturgistones.com. And, oh, sorry, you get 20% off, too, just because you listen to this show. And that's if you use the promo code PODCAST20 at Joey Sturgis Tones. Okay, go to mattandtobyband.com and see our pre-order packages. Come see us on tour. Here we go.
Break it down, Dada.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down.
With Matt Carter.
Yeah!
Shoot off.
The wing of the plane?
The wing of the plane. Break off and fly off in the distance. I know we're going to die, right?
Yeah.
Do I start screaming? Do I leave the window open or closed? Do I tell others?
What do you mean? Close the window?
Do I want to see go down? Do I want to look and do I want to watch going down? Or I'd rather just, I can't even watch that.
That none of those things would enter your mind in that situation at all.
Yeah. Shit. Sorry, babe.
She's going to call you right back.
I'll tell her I'm podcasting.
Leave me alone. I'm podcasting.
I'm podcasting. Also, I want a divorce. Did you get the divorce papers?
So you think you, I mean, you, if you had, first of all, if the plane.
Are we starting?
We're rolling.
I'm a noob. Wait a minute.
If the plane wing flew off, you wouldn't think anything because you would be the flying off.
You are wrong.
The physical.
You are way wrong.
The G force on your body would be in some weird, crazy spin. You would be nothing but glued to or locked to or already slammed against the wall. And I mean, you would be
okay.
in pure physical trauma instantly.
All right. So maybe the wing doesn't fly off, but I see the engine go wrong or something. And I start saying, oh, shit, we're going
down. So the pilot says, guys, we're out of fuel. There's nothing we can do.
No, that's what I'm saying.
We will be in a nosedive.
Does the pilot tell you? When the plane goes down, does the pilot even tell you? Do you want to know?
No,
like, if you didn't see the wing fall off, and you just, like, if I guess you would go, oh, this is really bad turbulence. Oh, no, something's really bad. But maybe you would have hope. You know what I mean? But if somebody said the wing fell off, you would go, there is no hope.
Right.
The last minute of my life will be sheer terror and horror, and it will end in death.
Yep.
Do you want to know that?
No.
Right. No. So, I mean, I was just thinking, though, if you could watch yourself go all the way down, straight down, like if you start doing the 1 mile drop or whatever it is, you know, I don't know if it's 1 mile, but how many ever, it's your 30,000 feet drop. Would you watch it or not?
No, if you had any kind of presence of mind, let's say you're a Buddhist monk and you're the most centered person on earth, you go, cool, I get to do that free anti-gravity thing for the last 2 minutes of my life. Swimming around the cockpit is what you do.
This ain't so bad.
Like, I've always wanted to do that zero-G thing, and here we go. I'm going to enjoy these last 3 minutes.
Okay, but if you saw something bad happen, like both engines kind of fire started shooting out of them, right? You're not going down yet, but fire shooting out. Do you tell people? Or what do you do?
No, everybody's in default mode is 100% what can I do to survive is the only thoughts that would occupy your mind in any way. Is anything you could do that could help you survive.
Do you think
all you could possibly consider?
My first thought would be, I would
survival would be the only thing.
Do you think there's a parachute on the plane?
You would think, can I fly? Can I flap my arms fast enough? What if I take the seat cover off and my jacket make an
Heard
umbrella?
About that woman that fell what if I landed in trees and lived?
Yeah, I mean, could I dive out and head for a lake? That's what you know. Those might be the only thoughts you could think, if you could even think them, but probably none whatsoever.
I just think I think I would have to watch myself falling. Like if I could look down and go, okay, well I got to at least see that.
I shut the window of turbulence. It's now, just better.
How much do you think, like, crashing into the earth, you probably would die instantly, right? So you wouldn't really feel that much pain.
But I mean, the terror of going down is worse than any pain you probably.
Well, what about this though? Like Joey always talks about, annihilation might be 1 second of just hell. Uh-huh. Like, you get 1 second of hell. Would that be what, like, landing is? Like, is there a millisecond of the most pain you've ever felt, and then it's gone?
No,
you don't even get to feel the pain.
No, I mean, no, because first of all, even when you have bad trauma to your body, you don't really feel the pain. Even people that have been conscious and had, like, bitten by a shark, I mean, that of course is more painful than blunt force trauma of a plane crash, and they don't really remember it as it was hurting so bad while they were fighting the shark. So you don't do that. And secondly, pain is almost only something that you experience alongside anxiety and dread and those kinds of things. So that part would be really the dread and the anxiety of the pain and what's happening is, would be what you would actually be saying is the pain. Plus, at the moment you were having the pain, you're dead. So it doesn't even matter.
That's true.
It's just nothing to it.
Yeah, like Maybell tore her ACL, and she has had no anxiety or anything about it.
That's right.
I mean, she can't move her back hind leg right now. But Andy, our bass player and singer, tore his Achilles, and it was devastating.
Every day he's afraid of that.
Right.
He deals with that every single day, and that anguish. You know. So in humans, they say, and I read this in a Temple Grandin book about the Lost in Translation.
Temple Grandin.
Animals in Translation.
Lady, she had like autism.
She's an autistic animal lady, whatever. But she explains it really well, but that animals don't couple fear with pain. Like, if you hit a dog in the face real bad, he just goes, wah. Like, after the second it happens, the pain's less, and they've moved on. They're just in the, because they're in the present. They don't think in dread, or what could this mean? Do I have a broken face now? Do I need to go to the doctor? They're just, I get busted in the face, moving on. And so it's really the anxiety that's way worse than the pain. And that's illustrated really well with certain types of acute pain that you can feel that don't bother you at all, such as popping a zit.
Yeah.
That hurts unbelievable, and you're totally fine with it because you know what it is, and there's nothing bad. Like, if you had the pain of what it feels like when you're having a zit
actually
pop,
feels kind of good.
Well, but that's only the same as a tattoo because you know what it is.
Right.
So if you take that acute pinch pain of while you're squeezing a zit, if you felt that, let's say, on the back of your head for no reason, you had no idea what that was caused by, you would describe it as one of the worst pains you've ever felt, and you would be absolutely terrified and say, I think I'm gonna die, I need to go to the doctor, something wrong with my brain. I mean, it would be an experience that you could not imagine if you had that exact sensation detached from the fact that you know you were popping a zit.
Yeah.
So if you just the nerve sensation that you experience there is bad, but it's totally under control. You totally know what it is, and it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah,
just
that's why I always thought for sure, like, because I have a little bit of hypochondria. Like, because something happens on the inside of me, I think it's going to kill me.
That's right. Yeah.
If it happened on the outside, like,
you could just look at
myself and I go, that's not that big of a deal. It's probably way worse than what's actually happening inside.
If you felt that under your fourth rib, you would be.
I know.
You would describe the pain itself as unbearable.
Yeah.
But if you cut yourself with a, you know, fish hook while you were baiting the hook and you knew what was going on, you go, that hurts, but it doesn't matter.
How many times in your life have you, something happened in your body and you went, I'm dead?
Not many. I'm pretty good about that.
I would say 5 to 10 times a year for me. There's 5 to 10 times a year where something happens. It's not that crazy. And maybe I've even experienced it before, but I go, this is it. I'm probably dead. Yeah. I mean, this is the one. I had a good run. Now that I'm older, I have to tell myself, had a good run. It's not that bad. If you die now, you can't really complain. Like, that's how I make myself feel. I make myself feel more comfortable, because I used to be like, oh, no, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Now I go, I mean, I made it to 41. A lot of people don't get that. Yeah. Look at the life I've lived. Wow, praise, Lord, I can handle this.
You can handle it if you go from here.
Yeah. Like, if I die now, I really can't complain. Maybe I get another 40 years, but, like, here's the sad part about being 41 right now. I really realized, I think quality of life, I maybe have about 25 good years left. I think you can be I think when you're 65, 66, you can be pretty solid. But maybe as you start getting older after that, you just don't do as much anymore. Like, I don't even know if I run anymore. I jog. Like,
hey,
I don't know if I run.
put that mic stand down. What are you doing?
What's wrong
with
this?
We're on video. Just put it down, all the way down, and then just angle it up. And
I can't. That's why it hurts my body.
I literally got a Sawzall and cut the legs off this table to get it down low enough so that when the mic stand was, it wouldn't be in people's faces. And here you have racing.
It hurts my body to lean.
No, you don't have to lean. Ignore it. Just look at me, and so the people on the camera can see your face and your mouth move and everything.
This studio sucks. God.
All right, let's talk about
who designed this.
I'm in process of designing, and it will never be complete. But I want to talk about the anxiety and nervousness of, are you nervous to play the show tonight?
Yes, mainly because of remembering lyrics. Once again, I mean, I always have had trouble remembering a lyric here and there, but as I get older, I get more worried that I just can't remember. And so it'll be bad.
Like, is that the worst thing that can happen to you on stage? Is forget a lyric, not sing bad,
not,
or your voice?
It's not bad at all when you're with a full band, like distortion and I can scream nonsense and it sounds okay. Or I put my mic out to the crowd. If I forget a lyric, it's totally fine. But when it's you and I playing acoustic and it's quiet, every single thing relies on the lyrics and the vocal delivery. And to me, and maybe that's not true, but at least it feels that way to me.
Oh, it basically is
so true. So right now, I am worried. Like, we're doing a cover song tonight, and I'm like, well, I remember the words, and does that matter? Can I play it off? What's the joke I can make if I forget the words? Like, it's funny. Sometimes I've thought now, you know how somebody makes fun of you and you get mad or whatever, and then after you walk away, you go, man, I wish I'd I should have said this.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Like, I think about that now because I've played so many shows. I do, like, oh man, if I would have said this, it would have covered that well. So I go, if I forget lyrics,
that's right,
then maybe I should say this, and that way I'm prepared to say something funny from stage, you know, like a rain delay. You know, when hosts of a baseball game, they probably have a few things they can talk about, but the really good ones, like, you go, oh man, this is just as entertaining. Wow, it's a rain delay and they're talking and it's so good. So I want to be able to do that. So I sometimes have a couple of ideas. If I mess up on a cover song or something, I'll go, well, I didn't write this song, or you know, I'll just make a joke.
What did we do that time? What do you do when you sing Happy Birthday? Was that when Grant was playing bass with us and we messed up on stage and we sang Happy Birthday and played that off?
Grant from Under Oath, we were playing Fractions, and that changes from 4/4 to 6/4 or something, 6/8, whatever. And
he was filling in.
Yeah, he was filling
two
in
two shows. Yeah, playing bass with us.
And it was a little Christmas tour.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Joel had to go to Disney World or something with his family. He didn't go on tour with us. So 30-year-old Joel could go on vacation with his family instead of his business.
Yeah.
And so Grant filled in, and we were at the TLA.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia, and he totally messed up, and we had to stop in the middle of the song. And so I was like, what do I do? This is so bad. And I said, oh, you know what? Tricked you guys. Actually, I think it's Matt's birthday.
Or Grant's birthday.
I said, it's Grant's birthday. Come on. We're surprising Grant here. Happy birthday. So I was hoping everybody would think. They didn't mess up. They just stopped to trick Grant for happy birthday.
I think that was brilliant. Because it's just such a shift. And it's, here's what we're doing, and here's where I'm taking you, which is all about. It's just the leadership and the confidence.
Right.
But that worked. Unbelievable. Because now, that's a really good trick. In fact, keep that always.
Yeah, I will.
Just always use that, because
if I mess up tonight, what if I have to sing 6 times happy birthday tonight?
I get nervous about it, because all I do, since I'm the backup or the second guy, are singing and play, you know, you're playing the main guitar parts and singing. So all I can do is mess up.
That's right.
There's nothing I can do. I'm not doing any flashy solos, and I don't have anything. I'm just there to support. So when I mess up, I'm like, what did you even bring this guy for?
Yeah.
All I'm trying to do is blend in, but as soon as I play the wrong keyboard note, I'm an idiot, which will happen.
Playing with just you and me is good for me, because it is very easy, like with Emery, to go on autopilot for shows. Like, I really can. It's just almost, and in some ways it's better because I don't overthink it. So, like, this, though, I really do over, like, I'm going to probably practice a few more times today just by myself and sing over the lyrics and stuff like that, because I'm really nervous. So, in a way, it's helpful. In a way, it's detrimental, because I overthink it, which leads me to then forget, because I'm, like, when I forget stuff, it's usually because I'm thinking I'm going to forget stuff.
Yeah. Well, but you know why, though? That's because you're not in it. You're not present anymore.
Right.
So, that's why I have trouble reading. One of the reasons I have trouble reading is because I'm reading for a second, but then I'm thinking about, am I reading this right? And now I'm not reading anymore, and now I'm lost, and I can't read a nursery rhyme to my daughter.
Yeah.
That's really, if I'm reading out loud, if I'm looking at words on a page, I can kind of get it or stay present. But it's doing this kind of show is absolutely, when you don't have muscle memory and you're literally playing the show, with no muscle, like you haven't done it 100 times, you've done it twice.
Yeah.
You just, like it's a, to me, the anxiety, do you think the anxiety part is also the exactly proportional to the excitement part of the satisfaction of like, whoa, like you're living, you're in it, you're pulling it off or not? Like the anxiety feeds into the satisfaction?
No. No, not really. Like I would be way more sad. Like when we play a show really well, I just feel better. Like no matter what, like the anxiety, like it just, I think for me, I just,
you'd rather have an autopilot show go well than do really good in the moment and not know if it was going to go good or not, you know? Like it's more satisfying to really pull something off and do a good job than, oh, this is going to be easy. Crowd's big, whatever.
I just think if I could go total autopilot, that means that everything is going smoothly. So I can't.
But you enjoy the music less if it's autopilot.
I don't know.
It's not
like,
in
I feel like I'm enjoying the moment because I'm thinking about all kinds of things, or I can actually think about the people there or what's going on. Like that to me is a little freeing. Like when I'm only thinking about the lyrics, I go like you know how bad I am with names or whatever. Like that same thing going back to what we were just saying. I overthink stuff too much to where I'm thinking, oh, I don't know this person's name. I don't know their name. Whatever. And so I actually have been doing like a, not meditation, I guess, but like I'll try and clear my mind and go, wait a minute. I know this person's name. I'm just overthinking this and getting really nervous. So let me not think about anything. And then oftentimes the name will come to me. That's the way I think of autopilot on stage where I go, wait a minute. I don't have to think, oh, I don't know the next chorus or I don't know the next verse, I mean. Or, oh, no, this next song, I think I know how it starts. I think I know how it starts. Okay. Whew. It's always just relief. Like autopilot for me means, oh, I got this. So I feel like I'm free and can really do it.
Well, yeah, but then you just get off stage and you realize how many thoughts you had during the set. Like, do you see that girl that was standing over there and that guy? Right. And that, what'd you think about that couple? And I'm like, well, I saw that when they got in that fight in the pit. I was right. Like, it's just all this stuff that wasn't the music you were thinking about.
I know, but that's fun. That means that the music's just happening, flowing through you to me. Like,
or,
I like that.
Or even abstract thoughts, like get off stage and you've just been thinking, like off in the universe.
Oh,
just
I know.
Thinking about something unrelated to anything local to where you are.
Right.
And you realize you've been thinking about that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I look down at my fingers and they're playing stuff and I promise you I have no idea what I'm doing. Like I look at my fingers and they're just doing the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And just do not, I promise you I couldn't tell you what chord it is, what note it is, anything. So it's just, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I notice it the most, like usually the last show of tour is the most autopilot, and I don't like the last show of tour because I think, oh, well, tomorrow I got to fly, then I got to get home and do this with the kids, and this, like, I'm on stage thinking about regular life again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that is
the last show's
no good.
The first show's not good.
Yeah, show's no good because it's all this anxiety.
You just aren't that good at playing whatever set
right. You're
about to do.
Yeah.
And you're overthinking it probably, too. So tonight won't be a good show.
No, it'll be horrific.
And this will have aired this later, but... So
yeah.
You will already know that it was a bad show if you went and saw
it. Yeah. If you came to the show, you'd be like, yeah, they were right. I mean, they were totally, it was real bad. Toby really messed up bad.
So we're recording this now and we'll air it next week when the pre-order for the record is up. But I wanted to get this before we got on the bus because I wanted to do it in the studio here. But we're going to do a premiere from the record. So it'll be the first time anybody's heard anything from it. What song do you want to do?
I think we're going to do Pastor Stop By.
Okay.
And so this one isn't done. I mean,
it's a rough mix,
but so you're getting to hear it before the song's even different.
It's not even final mixed or mastered or anything, right. But it's going to give you an early taste.
This will give you a taste.
And if you do, okay, let's see what else we're doing. If you do pre-order the record right now, and I always tell people this, pre-order is the only time that it's even matters. Like it's the whole release cycle to us these days is the pre-order. It is almost the only time to collect money. After that, it'll just be out, people will stream it, and that's totally good. But during the pre-order is actually the only time this really is a chance to really make any money or support the band. So that's why we try to make it a big deal. So much so I don't think pre-order is a good term for it. I wish I had a better term of what to call the time. Because if you pre-order it, which I hate saying pre-order, we'll send you by this point, we'll have some songs mixes done, and we'll just go ahead and send. I think we're going to send out. What do you think, Reed? We're going to send two songs for the pre-order? Yeah. So we're going to have two finished songs for anybody that pre-orders it, which you can do right now as you listen to this. And we'll just do a promo code down for this podcast, and you can get, what do you want to do, 10% off? 15% off? 15%.
Woo.
So 15% off whatever you get on the pre-order, whether it's the digital or t-shirt, whatever we have, vinyl. And you'll get two of the songs right away today because doesn't matter. We can do whatever we want to. So let's listen to this track, Pastor Stop By. Let's talk about it first, though. Is the song? Why do you want to play this one?
So this is the one that I think it kind of captures what we're trying to go for. Like, there's some other songs that we thought about playing today, but they're, I don't know if it totally captures exactly this record. I think this song captures it. Now, what's really funny, too, is I think this is the last song I wrote for the record. Uh-huh. Like, we were talking, let's write one more original. And so I wrote this one really quickly, and it's funny, we're talking about Matt Johnson, who's playing drums with us tonight. He played drums on this, and he said he remembered me saying this, and at the time, he's like, what? This doesn't make any sense. And then he was like, I totally get it. So this song, I said, I want it to be a cross from, like, country music and Radiohead. And at the time, that sounds like a goofball, idiot
was
thing
that a
say.
Concept idea you had, or when you wrote it, it just popped in your head, or what?
I was thinking a little bit about that, and then Zach totally kind of led it that way, and I think that's when I said it. Once Zach started working on the music, he got the idea. We weren't trying to write
but
a
did you have the
song.
Idea that you wanted, did you have a song that started feeling country and say, I want to take it in a direction, or did you say before you even sat down to write the song, I'd like to do this experiment to see if I can pull this off, and then you sat down and wrote it?
Well, one of the things I like to do is super heavy, really melodic, almost catchy lyrics, and then very simple music too. So that's why I wrote this song. And then I knew Zach would bring a whole other mm-hmm. level to it. So it's really cool because he did change. I mean, this song is just really, it's very neat, and the everything about it just is so cool. And it really captures the idea. Like, the name of this album is I Quit Church. And this whole song is just about a pastor coming by wanting to talk to you, you know, because you hadn't been at church in a while, and what that means and what it looks like and what really your faith is. And, you know, it's kind of sad, and yep. it's very truthful and honest. So I wanted people to hear this because I think it captures at least the idea. Not all the songs sound like this at all, but this captures the idea of what this record embodies, what the idea of this record is, I think.
Well, a couple things. So Zach, that you're referring to, is Zach Bolin, who's the producer. So that's one of the things I'm excited about on this is I just kind of had this notion in my head that I wanted it to not be overproduced, and also I didn't want to even record it or produce it, and I wanted to get some good help outside ear of somebody, so less engineer heavy. So I thought a cool idea would be to hire, and I'm playing around with this idea. We did the same thing for Devin's record that Chris Keen did. I wanted to hire somebody that's less of a producer and more of a arranger, band leader, musician, so that because the engineer, I don't want it over engineered anyway. Right. I want it to stay simple. So I want somebody with medium engineering skills, but higher on creativity to just collaborate. Because right. It always kind of goes the other way. You say, I want a producer that'll help us add stuff to the songs. But if they're very engineer heavy, it never really happens that way. So I wanted to have somebody that wasn't even confident in their production and engineering, but was confident in their arranging. So.
Right. Well, that also lends itself to you end up with cooler, better sounds, which ends up being better anyway.
More interesting.
Like, just because you, like, the idea of working with, it's great to work with a great engineer, but that means your record will sound good, but this record is going to be dynamic.
It's going to be just
and you're
going
to hear things because the artist is wanting you to hear this part. Mm-hmm. Where it might seem like inconsequential or whatever, it really is important to hear everything. And this record, you're going to get to hear everything.
Yeah, it's definitely, and again, we've got a little more probably editing, mixing, stuff
this
to go.
This is not a finished product, what you're about to hear.
The pastor stopped by this evening, said they'd miss me at church. Turns out my mama had asked him to come see me at my worst. She's scared that she's losing her baby, that her son and heaven won't meet, and church is the only place that can help people see. But they don't. I told the man sitting there across from me that he was a good man, and I'm glad. Though I 6 weeks ago. He smiled and laughed and said, "Son, I don't." And they
my favorite things about that is the strings. First of all, having strings is cool,
yeah.
But the exact specific way they sound to me is, it sounds very close to the string recording and style on Smashing Pumpkins' Melancholy and Infinite Sadness,
yeah.
All the strings on that.
Yeah.
It's always been my favorite, and I was real pleasantly surprised to hear that on it. But Zach did those strings with Dan Koch's wife's sister, I think.
Hmm.
The ones that were at the Christmas party.
Yeah.
And then they play with Vocal Few sometimes and those. So they were at our, did at that Christmas party, but those are the people that did the strings on that.
Strings are always intimidating to me because, one, I'm not a strings player, and I feel intimidated that it feels like a class of music that is above me.
It is.
You know what I mean?
It is.
Yeah, no, it is. And it is. Yeah. You're right. And so I feel awkward. And then also, because of that, it's super easy for somebody like me to put strings on something and it be cheesy and bad.
Yeah,
it brings that down. So being able to work with Zach, who got the idea,
yeah.
you know, or has the idea of what we're trying to pull off, he can do it in a way that's respectful to the quality of what it should sound like.
Yes, it is a problem with strings because I like to arrange, and I even like to arrange strings part, and am decent at it. But if you get good strings players, and then you force them to play your parts as a non-string player, even if you like the notes, it's not. It feels like you're dumbing it down to make them
yes.
do a thing. But on the other hand, you're not asking them to write necessarily the songs or the parts. So it can you really need to give them enough freedom and figure out how to do it and spend the time so that they can play into their abilities, unless they're people you're very
right.
familiar with or you're very familiar with string arranging,
day
to day. But Zach let them, like he just went through some of it with them and had some ideas, and they spent enough time kind of crafting it until they just got it what fit. So it wasn't like notated and say play this or it wasn't just do whatever you feel like.
Right. Well, you wouldn't do that with the guitar or mm-hmm. the bass. So, I think a big mistake that a lot of musicians and younger musicians, immature musicians, we made this mistake too, is you go, ooh, this will make the music sound cool, having a violin.
Right.
You don't think, oh, wait a minute, let me create a part. Oh, there's a part that's needed. Yep. The violin works there. That's the way you think of, oh, we got to have a guitar here, or this distortion part. You think naturally with the music. A lot of times you add some instrument you don't normally play because it'll make it cool.
Uh-huh.
And then that is when it gets cheesy.
No, that's the worst, like, when people say strings, like put some strings on it. Like,
right.
like it's so it's just.
I know. It's just something. Yeah.
Turn the strings knob up or right. something is the way a lot
yeah,
of people.
Yeah, it's like delay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Let's do delay here. Yeah. Oh. Flange. Oh, man. Yeah. This flange will be awesome here. And then the music says, but this is, you're right. The way it worked out with this song is it is an integral part that is needed. There's a part that was needed, and so now the strings get to feel that, just like the guitar or my voice
yep.
or anything. It's just as crucial to it. So that makes it immediately worthwhile and good.
Yeah, I don't think people understand strings, like the level of difficulty, because you never hear a violin or a cello, I mean, essentially, you never hear it unless it's a world-class player.
Right.
Like, and if you do, you're like, holy shit, I thought, like, and they make it sound easy, like, oh, you play the violin or the cello, yeah. and then if you hear anybody in training that's not world class, like, this is horrible. It's like way bad, you know. Like, if you ever heard a kid practicing, it's just
yeah.
miserable. Like, you'll be good in 10
totally.
years, but you probably should just give up now.
I've always thought that that's why the violin might be the hardest instrument, because it sounds like crap unless you play
perfectly.
Unbelievably well.
That's right.
And if you play unbelievably well, it's one
it's
of the most beautiful
yeah.
instruments. But otherwise,
it really is. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to say this is objectively true, but it's very close, I think, to objectively true, that the human voice is the ultimate instrument. I think that's pretty obviously true if you count it as an instrument. And then the next closest thing to that is the violin in actual tone and timbre and voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's fretless,
right.
you know, and it's just, it's in the same range as, and it's very, very, very similar to the human voice, basically.
Right.
And the way it works and comes across, and the way, maybe even the way your brain keys into it is because it is similar
yeah.
to that. But, and you know how hard singing is. It's not, you know, singing is the same way. People say, oh, he's good at it. It's easy. But it isn't easy. And it's still, you know, to be in tune and to slide to that note, there's
right.
10,000 ways you can go from sing these four notes.
Yeah.
It's on guitar, there's
right.
three ways you could play those four notes.
Yeah, well, the guitar, for example, you can be a terrible guitar player and sit around a campfire and play G, C, D chord, and everybody goes, ooh, you play the guitar?
Wow. Yeah.
You know, if you pull out the violin around the campfire, everybody's
yeah.
like, oh, God,
yeah.
get away from me. Like, it's that, you have to be that good at it. Other instruments,
oh, yeah,
you don't,
exactly.
you know. When I took strings classes in college, I did cello and viola, because I knew there's no chance I'm going to get good at the violin. It's going to sound terrible. So if I bring it down, you know, a couple of octaves or whatever, I think I can make that sound a little bit better. Even though I did terrible at those two, you have to be so precise and with the violin that I was like, I'll never do this. So why would I even spend time playing around with it?
It seems like it's not a real, I was thinking about putting Georgia in violin or something because I regard the instrument so high, but it's pretty impractical, and
yeah.
you have to go a long way to ever make it useful. Like if you could become a good fiddle player that could improvise, oh my gosh, that'd be right. That'd be one of the greatest things possible. But the likelihood of you getting to that level is pretty low. Whereas, I mean, piano and guitar are, I mean, piano is so good of an instrument. I mean, if you can master piano or even get good at halfway good at piano with your ear and being able to improvise or kind of do jazz chords, if you could get just halfway good at that, which is really hard, of course.
Right.
It's so easy and useful, and you know. So I mean, for sure, it makes it's kind of like learning obscure languages. You know, like if you become the best at some dialect of Ukrainian, I'm sure that would be useful. But other than that, it's not too useful.
Yeah, I mean, so I can see the idea. Spanish, like Joey's kids, they take violin, and they say that that helps you the mental process that you use helps you in other things when you learn the violin.
I'm
like,
sure,
like they said, you know, if you learn violin at a young age, you realize certain things and it helps you with math or science or something, you know, just the idea of the pathways that you, neural pathways or whatever. But to me, you're right. Like, do you think you're going to sit down and start the process of teaching music to your kids?
Yeah, I already started.
You do that?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I make Georgia play three notes on the guitar to get a treat. What else would you do? And I make her sing. I make her play the three notes, and I make her sing.
So you got that idea from how you treat your dog, right? You're like, if he sits, yes, he gets a treat.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, it's called. Yeah. It'll be called classical conditioning.
Right. You know?
behavior. BF
Wait.
Skinner
so whenever and, you play the guitar, George's mouth starts watering.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Oh, is it,
well, it's just using her innate motivations or something she's semi interested in. But all I'm trying to do is connect her ear to an instrument, and then a little bit of the dexterity will eventually come. But
right.
You know, it's like I'll play three things, it's two notes in a row where you pull the one on this string, one on this string. It's not good. She can barely make the fret.
Yeah.
Damn, it doesn't matter. But just to be familiar with it and know, oh, I sing that note. And then I hear that note.
Right.
That's all. I'm just and give it, whenever she seems interested, I'll do it. It's not like we don't do it every day or nothing.
All my
like
kids sing a lot. Ike is really good at pitch matching. Like I'll go, Ike.
That's great.
And he'll do just it, and then I'll go,
find it.
And
that's
you know, he gets that really quickly. So we do that sometimes. I've been thinking about trying to get them to start just playing the piano a little bit. You know, they just want to bang on it.
Yeah.
And you know,
I just make that rule is you can play piano. I won't tell you what to do, but you can only use one finger at a time.
That's a good
so
idea.
So you learn it, and I want you to sing what you're playing. Just play it and then sing.
That's a
one,
great
two,
idea.
One, two, three, four. And she watched The Sound of Music and sings Do, Re, Mi.
Yeah, yeah.
So she'll sing Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. So she gets that and matches the pitches, but she doesn't understand how you're going to use it later. But for the record, I do not really like that method. I think there's just no reason that you wouldn't make that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's way easier to do. To understand and do, but it's less catchy, I guess. But
well, is it though?
I don't like thinking of fa. I like thinking of four. You know.
That's interesting. I wonder if that would have helped me. Four seems so much less interesting though. Like I feel like I'm singing when I say yeah.
But you have to translate. Like so, if you want to do "Mary Had a Little Lamb," you can do it, which is easier. 3, 2, 1, 2, 3, 3, 3, 2, 2, 2, 3, 5, 5. That's easier. Now try and do it in solfege. Go ahead.
I can't.
Mi, re. Do, re, you know, you're not having to think to translate it.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, maybe.
I don't understand why you wouldn't just do numbers.
It sounds way cooler, though, if you could do it with solfège.
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't
If you
apply.
Sang it, it sounds better than singing a
number.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying. It's more entertaining as a kid or something. I get that. But because then later on, when you're trying to play a chord and you want to play a C, you want to play a C major 7, then that's a C with T on it? No, it's with a 7 on it.
Right,
it's a 7, so it's a B natural, C,
that's
E,
really...
G, B, 1, 3, 5, 7. Not do, mi, so, ti.
But is that like saying like a color has a sound or like you know what are you seeing right now? It's red or you know this sound. Mm-hmm. What color would you describe? Is that the same thing like the one is a do? That's what it sounds
just
like.
Let it be one. I mean, but I get it. Either way, I approve of that method of learning matching pitches to syllables and then being able to recall them and apply them. It's a good. It's
Julie
a good
Andrews
method.
Is a real jerk.
Yeah. What a jerk.
Oh, what a jerk.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly not gonna force the kids to do music. But I think violin lessons would be real expensive and they're probably not gonna
do
go
that.
Good. Like, are Joey's kids getting good?
No.
they've been doing it for years.
They did violin, and I think they've all moved on to dance and other stuff. You know, like,
well, ballet's the same.
Yeah.
Well, how useless is that? What, are you going to be good at it? No. If you are, so what? I mean, you're not even going to be good. So,
but it'll help you in all other ways. But the actual thing, you're probably not. I mean, it takes a very, there's a very small minority of people that would spend enough time to get good at it. And how about this? If you really were going to be good at ballet, you need to spend way more money and way better teachers and all kinds of stuff. You can't just go to the local ballet studio and get
it's
good.
It's useless. What I would suggest, if you had the choice between your kids being really into ballet or skateboarding, you'd get 1,000 times more out of skateboarding. That should be highly encouraged. It's dexterity. It's fun. It's art.
That's true.
And you can use it. And it's, skaters. But it's very similar and way better. You can do it by yourself at whatever level. It's social. It's all the same stuff.
Well,
it's
just not does that ballet. Translate all the way
like
into
everybody's fantasy about their kids being some weird prodigy is going to be pulled out of the class and go sent straight to Juilliard after year 3 of ballet or whatever.
Yeah. There's no chance. It doesn't matter how good you are. Yeah, you're not. But does that translate the same way, too, is do you need to learn history or should you figure out how to work on cars?
Whatever you like is what you should do. Whatever you have personal motivation towards is what you should do.
So if you like ballet, do it, but it's expensive.
Well, yeah, I guess. I'm not saying nobody should do it, but, you know, it should not. I mean, it really shouldn't be treated as a higher thing than skateboarding to your kid. Because, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, of course, kids like ballet because they got the frilly dress and you spin around. That's why they like ballet.
That's true.
That's the only reason they like it.
Right.
Because they see a pretty girl is on TV, and then when they spin, the dress flies up.
Right.
I want to go to ballet.
That seems cool.
And then grandma thinks, my beautiful, perfect print. I mean, it's kind of a joke.
Yeah. It works in some way. Like this summer, we're doing swim lessons. So swimming you can use. So that's a good one. And if they get, I think my kids could get good at swimming, but
save your life. So
yeah,
it makes
sense. Exactly. It saves your life. You can do all this stuff. And there's no pressure there.
No.
There's no pressure with it's just, mostly just swimming.
Yeah.
It's mostly just fun. Maybe that's the way they look at ballet, but I know.
I'm not saying don't. People like it. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking while we're having this conversation with Joey and Priscilla, Joey's wife, would they be mad at us because their daughters do ballet and stuff? And
they do
be
whatever they want. No, I'm not saying, I'm not saying that's, I know I come across like I'm saying they are stupid or something. That isn't what I mean, but I'm just offering an alternative way of looking at it a little bit. Whatever anybody likes and wants to do is great, of course. I hope a lot of people play violin and do ballet and enjoy it, you know. But I just want people to kind of
You should kind of sound like Donald Trump. Just take away all the arts. You don't care about them.
Defund them all. Yeah, shut it down.
You can't take it away. Don't you think? I don't know if we're running out of time here, but don't you think that might actually benefit the arts? Like I have this total idea lately that all these things that people say, we got to fund the arts. If you don't fund them, more art will happen and it'll be more real and better possibly. I know that might not be totally true, but I think that people can do art and create. And usually when they're not funded and they just have to do it by the grit of their teeth and their own will, it's amazing.
Yeah, I just look for the bias and try to kind of make sure we're not going for the obvious thing and at least look at it clearly. But there's not clearly art funding and art pushing to children is just so easy to sound good.
Right.
So it's easy to, like, for instance, when they do charities and nonprofits and stuff like that, stuff that sounds like that gets funded unbelievable. And stuff that's like feed a kid doesn't. Or learn skills that will help a kid in real life doesn't.
Right.
But violin lessons for inner city kids, give them $1 million. So
unlimited.
So it's at least overvalued is all I would say.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to me, it just I really do think that. Like, if you don't help somebody unbelievable amount, then they have to do some on their own, and then they'll appreciate it more, they'll do more, will be better. Now, I'm not saying defund art. I get it. Like
and that's an untenable position. You had to be a monster, Donald Trump, to even suggest such a thing, which lets you know it must be thus overvalued because you can only be a villain for speaking out against it. But that, certainly it could be a real conversation.
I mean, I grew up not knowing that there was music outside of the radio. So then when I searched it out through life and figured it out, then I was able to create in a way that I didn't, you know, because I'd never had it before. And I went, I got to have this. So, like, my hunger for it was, you know,
momentum.
Right.
I
did it all, you know, I found the people to be in a band with, all the things that I had to do. Like, there wasn't anything that, because I was able to be taught, like, I taught myself guitar. I'm not good at it, but I was able to teach myself all that because I was like, well, I got to do it. I have to learn guitar.
Yeah.
If I don't learn guitar, something's bad. So then, if it would have been paid for, I wouldn't have cared. My parents got us piano lessons when I was little. I did terrible at it. I didn't learn. I didn't do anything good. And I always thought, well, I guess I'm stupid. I always regret that. But the problem was I didn't have any desire to because it was just too easy.
Well, I believe that teaching, literally teaching itself, is exceedingly overvalued. Just the idea of, and now education is everything. But teaching is very, very little insignificant part of learning. I mean, I would say this way. Teaching is not the best method for learning.
No.
It's just not. That's just, and the fact, and the more you reinforce that, you teach people, you literally teach people that they need teaching to learn. And that is horrible.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Like for example, I do a ton of car maintenance now because I go, I need to do this. I'm going to, oh, here's where I need the teacher. So if I see, like, I love
learning.
The way you should learn is you get to the point where you go, I don't know where to go. Then you need the teacher.
You need, not even necessarily a teacher, though.
Well, you need something there to inform you.
If you call YouTube a teacher, then sure. But I'm just saying, you know, like, that's not teaching in the classical sense.
Right.
No, it's learning.
Yeah,
learning is the best.
Yeah,
teaching is.
But you have there's it's a not the best way to learn to where you're like I don't know what to ask.
So
next.
Acquiring new information to learn, but that doesn't. But teaching implies at least teaching like a class and a method and a thing and a universal. It's like that's 1800 shit. I mean, it's whatever. It's not. I mean, there's some situations where it's useful.
Yeah,
training is learning. Detailed, regimented training that's learning. It's not necessarily teaching. Coaching is kind
of teaching. But you need a teacher when you get to a point you don't know. Like, for example, I want the doctor that's opening me up to have learned from somebody that knew something. Like, you know what I mean? So,
what if he learned by some non-traditional method, but he was clearly much better than somebody that had a teacher? I mean, it just doesn't matter. I'm not,
I agree with you. And the same way is, do I want the doctor that's opening me up, he made all D's or C's?
No,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I get it. But what I'm saying is, I think that the
I mean, do you count YouTube as a teacher?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, if your definition of teacher is consuming digital media, then, like, are you a teacher right now if somebody learns from this podcast? I mean, that's not really what we mean by when we say teacher.
No. Yeah, yes. That's
what
I'm saying.
People are learning if they listen to this podcast, but they're not being taught.
In the classical sense of what a teacher is, you come here, and now be quiet, listen to me, this, this, and this, and now here's how, all those things. Yes, I think those are outdated. What I'm saying is, the most time I learn is when I go, oh, I need to learn this. And then I look up online Pro Tools question of how do I expand the
after
tracker.
After you already have the need for the information.
Right. Yes.
And then
you
get the information that has a category in your brain that it fits in, and now it's locked. Whether a teacher's involved or not, it does not matter.
100%. And that's how also, I mean, you take that to religion or to Christianity. I love reading the Bible going, wait a minute. I'm reading the Bible. I don't know what this means. Let me look. And then I find out information about the scripture that I'm reading. And there's tons of times where I read a scripture and I read one scripture and then do sometimes 30, 40 minutes, an hour of searching, going, oh, whoa, this person thinks this. This person thinks this. Oh, and then I'm seeking out the teaching as opposed to the teaching.
I still wouldn't necessarily call that teaching unless you found a college lecture.
What do you call that?
Learning.
Yes, but I mean, there's somebody that's giving me the information. Who's that person? Even if it's digitally, there's a real person there going.
That's what I'm saying. You're inferring the word teaching to be to be part of the process of learning. You're saying if I learned something, I must have been taught it. But that's a misuse of the term of the concept.
I don't think so. I think that the person showing me how to change
what you're saying is
my
that
O2 sensor in my van that I have to do. I watch that and I go, oh, that guy's teaching me. Now, he doesn't know me. He didn't ask to teach me. He has a skill that he's showing. Maybe, like, teaching is
does teaching imply a person tells you a fact and you learn? I mean, it's just however you come to that knowledge is learning, and teaching may or may not be involved is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think we're probably saying the same thing, but I think that is teaching. I think YouTube, Google, whatever, is a person or computer or whatever is showing you a skill.
I mean, I think you learn
a bit of information.
I think you learn almost everything you've ever learned from conversation, like overhearing or participating in conversations. That is where you have, for instance, everything you ever learned from your parents was not them teaching you, just being around them. That's almost everything you know comes from that. Your social interactions and observation. That is teaching implies at least that the person's intent was to teach.
But you would agree, though, that you have to be taught at least the simplest things. Like, you got to learn the times table.
You need somebody
to show you that or something. Like, there's certain things. I mean, you got to understand. You need somebody to show you that
you need to learn
this sign means stop and then when the walk-in person, you can cross the street.
You need to learn that. I'm not saying you don't need to learn it. I just don't know if you need
to be taught. No, but you don't know you need to learn it. So if you walk across the street, you can get hit by a car. But if somebody goes, hey, listen, you need to know, you didn't even know to ask the question. That hand means stop. Sure. The walking person means go.
I'm not saying all teaching is wrong or anything, but I've tried to think about it. It frees people's mind a little bit if they don't necessarily attach teaching to learning.
Now, I think.
And when you program that, you need to go to this school to learn this thing so that the more you teach people. I wound up in a corner there. I said teach people. But the more you attach teaching to learning, it makes people believe, they infer that they can't learn on their
own. But you have a total bias because you hate teachers.
Yes,
you
always hated
all your teachers. So you have a real bias against them. Like, you don't like them. You think,
no, I don't.
Like,
but I've had two that I like, at least.
Right. So there's a couple people that impressed you. But if the person doesn't impress you and they have the title, you kind of go after that person. Your natural inclination. Like, if somebody has a title and then you find out, wait a minute, this person teaching geography, I'm asking questions, they're acting like they don't know. Who the hell are you?
I just hate to see people feel like, kind of just pressured into, like, implicitly learning that they have to. The only way to learn is from teachers. It's just goofy, as opposed to self-learning.
Yeah, you definitely you war against a system that says, hey, you have to learn this way.
That's the best thing you could have ever done in the 1800s is make a bunch of lectures and school. So we didn't have anything else. I mean, that's one of the best things that ever happened was mass education by teachers. I agree with, in human history, one of the most valuable things that ever happened. Best possible solution. English speaking, colonial empire did that. One of the best things that's ever happened to the world.
Yeah.
It was good a long time ago. We have moved on.
I think I agree with you. I totally believe, like, I wanted to start a college where your whole college career is you look up stuff on YouTube. You say, I want to learn about, whatever it is. I want to learn. To a certain extent, you wouldn't want to do this with, like, maybe a doctor. Maybe you could in the future once it gets better. But say you want to learn about how to be an auto mechanic or whatever. You can.
Training is very important.
For me, my education was way better the outside of the classroom. Like, you're right, having conversation with you guys, figuring out, oh, wait a minute, if I talk this way, it's nicer. Or oh, wait, when I said that, it made people mad. Or interacting with people. So I wanted to start a college where it's just a dormitory. And then there's, like, one guy that's a counselor, and says, hey, you've been watching the YouTubes? You follow? Okay. And you just work a regular job. And your school is just – but you get to live with other people in a dormitory.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's your whole college experience for four years.
Yeah, I'm big on learning and education, but it's just overvalue of teaching. Anyway, we got to go.
Yeah, Matt and Toby record, pre-order it now. You will not be disappointed. It's probably.
Oh wait, what website? What website do they got to go to? MattandTobyBand.com, and you get anything you want there. We'll send you two songs right away or within 24. Not probably right away. Instant, not even within 24 hours, instant download of two songs. You really will be helping us out, and I'm begging you to do it. And use the promo code DOWN, DOWN, for 15% off, and you will have done a good deed for the day.
Please help us. We don't make us go back to that other band, Emery. We are doing everything we can. My God, it's been how long, Matt? We've been in this band like 15, 16, 17 years. Please don't make us go back to Emery. We want Matt and Toby to be our only band. Those other guys in that band try and take our money. They're mean.
Yep.
They're awful. Please. I mean, this is the only band we want to do.
We're all over screaming by now, right?
Oh, God.
I mean,
I was over it in 2003.
Yeah.
I've hated screaming in music since 2003.
All right. See you later.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today, such as Liz Stokes of The Beths,
and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
That's what ransomware is all about. It's psychological pressure.
Ransomware, when your computer's hacked into and your data held ransom. Attacks are on the rise, and Russian gangs are making billions of dollars.
The moment I got that message, I knew our greatest fears that we ever have are starting to come true.
The post-Cold War era is over.
.com, The Hacking. A new season from Crowd Network with me, Katie Puckrick. Just search for .com, that's D-O-T-C-O-M, and subscribe.